Parshas Vayishlach was a very instrumental parsha for Rav Amitel, because Yaakov's activities, as the Ramban says, were a template for Jewish history. When Rabbi Akiva used to travel to Rome as part of the delegation to plead on behalf of the Jewish needs, and remember, it was a very dark period after the Bar Kokhba rebellion was crushed, or maybe beforehand, but the Jews were persecuted. The Jews were facing the full fury of the Roman Empire, and the Jews were very declined. So they really didn't have much leverage, and the fate and the consequence of these encounters with the Roman emperors would be very, very consequential. There would be real stakes for these meetings. Rabbi Akiva used to read Parshas Vayishlach to chart a course. So Maisa Avosim and Labanim isn't just in a general sense of moral instruction, but there was a sense in our Avos and a sense in our Tanayim that this would provide a template for our interactions with Esav. And in the case of Esav, it was very much Rome, because Rome stems from Esav. Now, Rav Amital would speak a lot during Parshas Vayishlach, not so much about Rome, he lived in the 1970s and 1980s, but about trying to build a model for challenges which Jews hadn't faced in 2,000 years, including Rabbi Akiva, and that was Jewish sovereignty. And all of a sudden, there were the types of questions that we hadn't faced in 2,000 years, and now had to, or faced in this fashion, and now we had to face as a people. And when we face questions we hadn't faced in the past, we don't have Svarim, we don't have people that spoke about it. If you ask me a question of Hilchos Brachos, what bracha to make, or you forget Yalav V'yavra, I could bring Svarim and stack them to this table, to the ceiling, and you'd have solutions. But all of a sudden, there are a range of questions that are emerging that we don't have answers to. And Rav Amital used Vayishlach as a roadmap. So what are the two or three issues that Rav Amital drew from Vayishlach? I'm combining several sichot. This isn't one sicha. First of all, as much as Yaakov has this confidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised him protection and security, he's very wary about going to war. That's really the last resort. He tries to pacify Esav, he tries to give gifts, even to the point that Chazal are doubly critical of him. How many times does he say the word Adoni Esav? 15 times. Chazal are very critical. How unctuous he is, how inferior he makes himself to Esav. Chazal are actually critical of Yaakov. Why did you even bother with Esav? You should have run away. Like, why did you even get entangled in this whole mess with Esav? But you sense Yaakov's wariness about war, and he's afraid Vayiram Ma'od, he's afraid of Vayetzelo, he's afraid of entering this whole situation of battle. We now live in Eretz Yisrael, and sadly, our 70-plus years in Eretz Yisrael have been marked by a lot of violence and a lot of war. And in order to survive in this country, we have to have Baruch Hashem, Be'ezos HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Schus of Am Yisrael. We have a very, very powerful army. And Baruch Hashem, as the country has evolved, our army has become a superpower. But that can't make us eager towards war. No one is eager towards war, but when we have the capacity that we have militarily, sometimes we feel like we should solve the problem. We'll just go to war. We'll just solve it this way. We'll solve the Gaza problem this way. We'll solve the Lebanon problem that way. And maybe we have to. It's hard to know. But there should be a real where there's a danger, especially when you combine nationalism with military successes, that the stopgaps and the hesitance towards war will start to erode. And part of what made Rav Amital very unique within the religious Zionist world of the 80s and 90s, there weren't enough voices sounding this. Obviously, no one wants war, no one wants casualties, but when you get caught up in ideology and you feel that you want to just defeat your enemies, and especially when it comes to land, sometimes the voices that say war is really the last resort and let's avoid it, A, not just practically and logistically, but also morally, and it's not the value of choice, not the ideal we'd like to select. So Yaakov's hesitancy and all the efforts he takes to avoid war, even to pacify, even his conciliatory gestures, even if we have to take decisions which aren't reflective of the status we're meant to enjoy in this country. People say, look, we're back, it's Eretz Yisrael, we shouldn't be ceding land, we shouldn't be making accommodations. Obviously, 20, 30 years later, peace for land doesn't resonate with the same possibility that it used to, because most of our partners are not serious about peace, seems like. But in those days, peace for land was a real option. Sadly, no longer is an option. And just the hesitance towards battle and towards war. The second issue that Rav Amital spoke a lot about in Parshas Vayishlach is based on a Sephardim. The Sephardim in Parshas told us, basically says that Yitzchak knew who Yaakov was, and he knew who Esav was. But why should Yaakov be burdened by government, by politics, by being a general? Let him just sit all day and learn. So Yitzchak's initial intent to deliver the brachas to Esav is to create a division between church and state. Let Yaakov be a religious person who isn't burdened by the affairs of state and politics, and let Esav run the country. And if anything, it's better for Yaakov, especially when he has to go into Galus, to be hosted by Esav. Why should he be hosted by foreigners? Let him be hosted by his own brother. So let's empower Esav politically. Let's empower Esav militarily. So Yaakov doesn't have to waste his time with the dreariness of day-to-day activities and politics. And in Parshas Vayishlach, Rav Amital said that basically Yaakov still felt uncomfortable. Like, maybe I should be that person. Maybe when he wants to deliver these brachos to Esav, he says, take my brachos, I have enough. And his encounter with Esav is not just a show or demonstration of conciliatory flexibility. But Yaakov's saying, maybe our father was right. Maybe I feel guilty that I tricked you through mom's engineering, taking brachas that really belonged to you. It wasn't just interpersonally, felt bad for Esav. Yaakov was doubting whether he should be, on the one hand, a spiritual human being, on the other hand, also leading a state and running a state. So history already decided that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be involved in both. For 2,000 years, we never had this challenge because our lives was limited to the Beis Medrash. Our lives were limited to Torah, to Tefillah, to building a community. We didn't have to get involved in the messy details of running a state. Now we're back in Eretz Yisrael, and obviously, for Mashiach to come, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be involved in more than just the Beis Medrash. But is there an uneasiness about that? Or is there a merging between politics and religion? One of the things Rav Amital's legacies, to me at least, was, okay, we have to be involved in building a state, but politics really never entered the yeshiva. The yeshiva never had a political voice. People said political ideas, but there's never an indoctrination. Politics wasn't seen as, in order to be firm, you have to have this political position or that. Tanakh was never read politically. I remember a couple of years ago, my son was in the army, and he was with some boys from another yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. American yeshiva, one of the Hezri yeshivas, which is much more politicized, and they were visited over Shabbat by one of the rabbanim from that yeshiva. I said, what did you think about the Shabbos? The Rav gave some Divrei Torah. They visited the Talmidim in the army. He said, very, very political. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, Trump is Achashverosh, and this one, Esther is Yonah, and this one is just we look at Tanakh for general guidelines about how to build our religious world and how to build a relationship with Hashem, how to view history, but to start pinpointing this person in Tanakh, and based on the conclusion of Sefer Iyov, this is what political position we should take or shouldn't take. It's messy politics, and even though Rav Amital did get involved in politics, it was like Had Hashem Shemayim. The sense that I've sounded so often, that life isn't led in the political arena. Life is led in the moral arena, the religious arena, the arena of Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be involved in the affairs of state, but it's still going to be a messy place. And yeah, Yitzchak's original intention was to spare Yaakov from that whole trauma. And Yaakov is wondering, maybe I should. Maybe A, Yitzchak's original model was correct, and B, the fact that I swore and lived from Esav, maybe I should return it. The final issue, which is much more general, is that whole term, Reishis Mi'chas Gulasenu, the fact that we're living through a messianic era, and the fact that history has turned, the fact that millions of Jews have returned to Eretz Yisrael, can lend just a general confidence that everything is just a walk in the park, and Mashiach's right around the corner, and we don't have to worry about any fears and any concerns. And Rav Amital said, look at Yaakov. Yaakov also had those promises. And Yaakov was back in Eretz Yisrael. And yet, Katanti Mikola Chasadim Mikola MS. And yet he was afraid. And yet he took all these steps. So we do believe that we're living through a messianic trajectory, and we do believe we're here to stay. But there are many, many, many decisions and questions and faithful issues that could arise. The only haftacha we have is that we're not going to be exiled again. But there are a lot of dangers amassing in our enemies, as you all know. And just this certain overconfidence that messianic fervor breeds, that we're back and nothing can go wrong, and we don't have to worry about our religious tenor and about our decisions. And just in general, the two issues I spoke about before are more specific. Issue number one Yaakov was conciliatory. He didn't want to go to war. That's something he chose. Issue number two, Yaakov realized that politics is not really where he belongs, although he may have to enter that field, and he does enter that field. Third issue is much more general. Do you have an attitude of confidence, or do you have an attitude of caution and concern, and you realize how precarious our situation is, even though we have a long-term haftacha? Long-term haftachas doesn't guarantee what's going to happen tomorrow. Chas Hashem, there could be terrible tragedies and terrible situations. Long-term means that Mashiach is going to come. It could be hundreds of years away, it could be thousands of years away. But it's just the beginning of a process. We hope it's not thousands of years away. So just that general practical caution, even in the face, and if you look in the religious Zionist world, sometimes you detect a sense of overconfidence and nothing could go wrong. If you want an extreme version of overconfidence, why don't we blow up the mosque, the Temple Mount, and blow up the mosque and the dome of it, so that hundreds of millions of Arabs invade. And after all, we have a guarantee from Hashem, so this will force the end game. If hundreds of millions of Arabs invade our country, then Hashem will be forced to defend us and be forced to deliver Mashiach. That's obviously corrupt thinking, immoral thinking, and very, very dangerous thinking. So those are three general patterns in Vayishlach. One, war is not something we should celebrate, and no one celebrates it, but it should be the choice of last resort. Number two, politics is not an inherent part of your avodas Hashem in your profile. And number three is general caution, even in the face of the confidence of messianic promises. Okay? Tomorrow, Chasidus. Okay,